Thanks for tuning in to the SevCells show. I am your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate right here at KPPF, Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. And you can listen in at 95.7 FM, 98.5 FM, and 1040 AM. But please don't forget to like and subscribe to our YouTube at KPPF Radio 1040 AM. We are here with Chris Frankmont, Guaranteed Rate.
Woo woo!
Back at it again. And Ben Goss with First American Title. And he's going to go ahead and kick us off for our starter kit. Just to kind of introduce to us what you do about, you know, title, what your role is in the title insurance company, you know, anything that someone might need to know about title as they kind of get started in their real estate ventures.
Sure. If you're listening in, load up on caffeine because this is going to be jam-packed with excitement. So I'm Ben Goss. I'm the area manager for First American Title in Southern Colorado. The company that I work for, First American Title, is a Fortune 500 company headquartered in Southern California. And we have four offices here in Southern Colorado and maybe another 15 or 20 in the Denver metro area. The offices that I work with here are up north, kind of near the Chapel Hills Mall. We have one downtown. We have one out east on Powers. And we have another up in Woodland Park. So,
okay, so you have offices.
We've got offices. We've got a lot of people, a lot of offices, and seriously, there's a lot of moving parts. There's about a dozen people that work for us here, spread out in those four offices. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on a day-to-day basis.
So when it comes to your role for the title company, you said you're the area rep. What is it specifically that you do besides keep angry realtors happy?
That's a
full-time job.
Yeah, right.
That's a good question. So I make sure that the light switches turn on and off when we walk in every day. But no, in all seriousness, there's so much that goes on that someone wouldn't understand. So a title insurance company closes real estate transactions, that huge stack of papers.
This is why Ben's so boring. He's the paperwork guy.
The paperwork guy. And so along with that, like as boring as it sounds, you have to make sure the copiers work. You have to make sure that you have ink.
You're in communication with a lender.
You have to have communication with a lender. So
the realtor,
I try and make sure that our staff is staffed appropriately so that if someone like Chris or someone like Seven calls our office, they get someone that answers. They get someone that has some wherewithal on what's going on in a transaction. They get someone that knows what they're doing.
Right, 100%.
That's what I do.
So when it comes to the title and lender relationship, right? I mean, you guys work very closely together on every transaction. How does that start? You know, this is our starter kit, right? So let's really break down the nuts and bolts here.
It starts with typically me taking someone like Chris out to lunch and soliciting him for his business.
Yes, I do love the free lunches from Title. Usually we're the ones having to buy people lunches. That is great. But on a transactional basis, I mean, really, usually the listing agent, as you guys are well aware, are picking those title companies. And so when someone goes under contract, they oftentimes know before us or right around the same time as us. And we both start working on that file. We're sending them our title request with everything we need from them. They're sending us documents. We're back and forth communicating, updating things, changing things. When we're starting to work up final figures, we got to get fees from Title, understand all their costs, make sure we're on the same page about those. Title's really that middleman for all the money. So when we're sending out our money, it's all going to Title. They're holding it. They're giving money to the appraiser, to the insurance company, to the seller, to everyone that needs it. And so we work hand in hand with Title really from the moment someone goes under contract until they are closed, funds dispersed, and the transaction's done.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, having a strong title insurance company is really important because if you have a crappy title insurance company, you guys got to bear in mind that these people are holding all of your money, okay? Like whatever your down payment is, you're wiring it to the title company. The lender's sending their wire over to the title insurance company. I mean, there's a lot that the title insurance company can screw up on the title commitment that your lender might have additional requirements for that can cost you time and money or maybe even a contract. So, I mean, having a title insurance company that can whip it around real quick is definitely an important thing. So when it comes to First American, Ben, what would you say sets you guys aside and apart from every other title insurance company? Because there are plenty.
So we are a Fortune 500 company. We have offices in all 50 states. So
when that's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. When people are buying or selling a house, typically they might not be coming from Colorado Springs. So if they're coming from elsewhere in the country and they need to stop in to sign something or drop something off, we have offices everywhere. So it makes it a little bit easier for them.
That makes my life easier too. I actually use the First American has a little fees online calculator. I use it sometimes when I'm doing out-of-state deals or a county that I haven't worked in before. I'll go check that to see if there's transfer taxes or things that I'm not aware of. Now, our first and foremost is call the title company in the other state, get the fees. But if I'm working it up on a night or a weekend and I'm not familiar with the area, I use First American's little title fee calculator to see what are some of the fees I need to be aware of out there.
100%. And one thing that I love about you guys having offices in all 50 states, I mean, that's huge for any mail out closing. If you've got a power of attorney, anything that has to be notarized, sent back, earnest money, dropping that off. A lot of people are becoming, in my experience, I don't know about you guys, but increasingly reluctant to wire. Are you seeing that at all?
Yes. Actually, it's funny you bring that up. We just had a transaction that someone spoofed our email address. They hacked into, I'm not sure whose email it was, but it was someone's email and they acted like they were us. And they told the buyer, it was a cash transaction, $1.2 million, I think. And they told the buyer to wire their money to a different location. Luckily, the buyer had an attorney. He was smart enough not to just send the wire there. But had he sent the wire,
it would have been gone.
It would have been gone. So, yeah, people are increasingly cautious about sending a wire for that exact reason. Once you send a wire, it's
done.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. And that's why you want a good title company that's following up, an agent, a lender that are keeping track of things. We had the same scenario a couple of years ago, and they impersonated the email, they copied the signature, and they started emailing me 2 weeks before closing. Hey, status update on this. Where is this at? Well, that title company was slacking. They weren't checking in anything with us. The only communication we're getting is this fake person. Now, eventually, when they sent the wire instructions changed, here it is. Luckily, our red lights went off, and when we found out that was fake and it had all been impersonated. But if we had a great, you know, title company like First American, I think we would have heard from them and then interim and been like, wait a second, this is not you as well. So
what are your, like, some of the main red flag markers for wire fraud? I mean, what would you tell our listeners to really look out for?
So there's the one main red flag, which Chris alluded to, is they changed their wiring instructions.
Yes.
Title companies don't. I've worked for First American Title for 8 years. We have never changed our wiring instructions. So
really?
This doesn't happen. If they're in the middle of a transaction saying that they've changed wiring instructions, it's probably not true. If we change our wiring instructions, you'll probably receive communication 100 different ways.
Right.
And that'd be a huge deal.
It'll be a huge deal. So the first thing is we don't change our wiring instructions.
That's super crucial to know. I mean, because wire fraud is absolutely on the rise. I think that we all kind of know that.
Yeah, so much so guaranteed rate requires my signature to have this whole little clause of we will not provide wire instructions. You must call the title company in person.
I won't provide them either.
So we don't. We tell everyone, you've got to call. Here is their phone number. Call this phone number and get the wire instructions over the phone.
That's another thing that I'd say too. Like if you're a realtor is trying to provide you with wiring instructions, that's not good. Okay. Like you want to be dealing directly with the title company or whoever you're supposed to be wiring your funds to. 100%.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So as far as all things title go, Ben, is there anything else that you kind of want to touch on today as far as, you know, title insurance?
Yeah. Educate everyone on title insurance.
That's you know, if you're listening to this segment, you're wondering what in the world is title insurance. Title insurance is on almost every single transaction, whether it be residential or commercial in the United States.
Refinance or purchase.
There's two different policies. To Chris's point, one protects the owner of the house, so typically you guys, and the other protects the lender, so Chris's company, for the money that they're lending out. And basically, you know, if I could simplify what title insurance is, it's an insurance policy that protects you and the lender for your interest in your home. So if you're buying 123 Main Street, your title insurance policy ensures that you're the owner, no one else is, and that there's not any outstanding, you know, maybe the seller put a new roof on the house, didn't pay for it.
Right.
Now you move into the house and somebody's
move in, there's a lien. Yeah.
Somebody's claiming
that happened to me on my last house where the week after we moved in, knock on the door, some contractor, hey, I'm looking for the seller's name, Jason. He owes us $24,000.
Oh my
great.
Gosh.
I'm calling my title company right now. And you know, thankfully it was they'd paid a contractor who hadn't or paid the contractor who hadn't paid the parent company and all that got settled outside of us. But I was sure glad I had title insurance in that moment.
And again, good thing you had a good title insurance policy, right? Because they are different and every company is a little bit different on that as well. But you know, the way that I like to explain title insurance to all of my clients is it protects someone's great aunt's cousin's sister's Aunt Bertha twice removed from popping up out of the grave with an unrecorded deed showing ownership to your property, you know? So definitely something that you want to have. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Thank you so much for tuning into the SevSell Show. I am your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate right here at KPPF. We will be right back with our market update. Thanks for tuning in to the SevSell Show. I am your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate right here at KPPF Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. You can listen in at 95.7 FM, 98.5 FM, and 1040 AM, but please don't forget to like and subscribe to us on YouTube at KPPF Radio 1040 AM. Now, we are going to go ahead and dive into our market update here with Chris Frankmont with Guaranteed Rate, because real estate comprises nearly half of our nation's wealth. So welcome to our market update, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot going on in the market right now. Early November, the Fed just met, and that was a big meeting. There was a lot of expectations around them starting to slow down or taper off their buying of mortgage-backed securities. So not to nerd out too much, we talked a little bit about this on a previous market update, but part of the reason interest rates have stayed so low was support from the Fed. They buy mortgage-backed securities on the back end, and the demand for those mortgage-backed securities is one of the big influencing factors on interest rates. So as they're buying those up, that's actually helped keep rates low. As they stop buying them, we expect rates to rise. And so there was already a lot of expectations around this that they were going to make that announcement. So a lot of that had already been factored in. That's the funny thing with rates is as soon as we have any inkling, it gets factored in. So things will happen and people are like, oh my gosh, rates are going to change. I'm like, no, they changed 2 months ago because of this. So this has been priced in for a while. However, all the expectation was for that to start happening next month. And they actually said they're going to start it this month.
That
was
yay.
It was kind of the big bomb drop per se that has already caused rate movement. We've already started to see rates climb from that because they're tapering off even sooner than expected.
So when you say climb.
Yes.
What are we talking?
Right. Well, it's hard to know for certain. I quit trying to do that after COVID when we saw rates rise over 1% in less than 24 hours. I used to tell people like the crazy story of the Trump election when I saw them rise 0.5% in 3 days, and then we saw a 0.5% in 24 hours. So, you know, we don't try to predict or know, but in general, we do expect them to rise. I mean, we've already seen them tick up 0.25% just in the last week or two.
Wow.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see another 0.25% before the end of the year, but who knows? Time will tell.
Holy cow. And so why do you think that this is the case? I mean, I know that you explained that on a technical, intricate level, but if you could put it into layman's terms, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, in general, when the Fed's doing that, when they're buying all those securities to keep rates low, they're really were trying to stimulate the housing market, and they did a great job. I mean, look at how many houses sold all across the country. The hot market that we saw,
it's kept our whole economy propped.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really helped keep things going, keep it juiced. But we don't want to see that forever. I mean, people would always ask me, well, do you think rates are going to get lower? And I'd say, that's a big problem if they do. It means our economy's really in trouble. And so, you know, them starting to taper that means they think that there's a couple of reasons. One is demand is decreasing a little bit for mortgages. Less mortgages are being done. They don't need to buy as many. So that'll balance each other out a little bit. But in general, they just don't want to keep dumping. Oh, man, I can't remember the figure it is right now. $70, $80 billion a month. Might be more than that. So don't quote me on it, you know, into buying mortgage-backed securities. And they're going to start decreasing it by $15 billion a month. So it's a lot.
Wow.
And at the end of the day, they don't want to keep dumping all of their money in there to prop up the mortgage market and keep rates low. That is a temporary fix when we have certain economic conditions like we had, but it's not something we want to do forever.
So would you say that seeing higher interest rates to a certain threshold, right, it would be a good indicator of a healthy and strong economy.
Yeah, it means we're moving in the right direction for sure. I mean, as we see sea rates start to climb, it is a good indicator that the things are starting to move in the right direction. Doesn't mean we don't have issues. Doesn't mean there's not other things that need to be addressed. But it is overall a positive indicator that the economy is moving in the right direction.
Now, as far as those rates increasing and someone's ability to qualify for a loan, right? If you might be right on that cusp, right on that threshold of, you know, I can qualify at a 3% interest rate for a $300,000 house, and now we're looking at a 3.5% or, you know, 3.25% interest rate, are you still able to qualify for that $300,000 house potentially if those rates
rise? Yeah, it's a great point, Seven. I mean, depends on the case, but not always.
Yeah.
That was the really tough thing that we had back when I referenced earlier when rates changed so drastically. You know, that was a time where rates rose a percentage point. I had to make a lot of phone calls and say, hey, your max just decreased from X to Y because of these changes. That was really tough. And so absolutely that can happen. That can decrease your buying power and even more so why it's a good time to jump in now while rates are still historically low. Have they gone up? Yes, but we are still lower than we'd ever been as of 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, when we're talking about rates going up, I mean, you look back in the 70s, they were like, what, 11 to 14%?
Yeah, late 80s were 18 or 19%.
Yeah, that's wild.
I mean, even just a couple years ago, guys, even just 3 years ago, we saw conventional rates jumping into the mid fours. I mean,
oh, yeah.
We were doing VA up into the high threes and low fours, which is still in the scheme of things a low rate,
yeah,
but much higher than we're seeing right now. And that was only 3 years ago.
So would you say low interest rates have been a large contributing factor as to, you know, equitable gains in returns?
People
are qualified,
question.
You know, for a higher dollar amount at that point.
It's a very interesting question. So yeah. I think that it's not something I've thought about before, Seth. It's a great question. I think just thinking basic supply and demand, you would think, okay, if rates are low, there's more people that can buy or want to buy that house that now have the ability to buy that house.
Right.
And absolutely that could
right.
push prices up. I mean, more demand means higher prices, right?
I mean, and at the end of the day, like the average borrower, they really only care about their monthly payment. You know, if they're paying $500,000 for a $400,000 house, as long as the monthly payment's the same, who cares?
You're exactly right. The two things that really affect people is the bottom line and monthly payment. I tell them all, whenever we're looking at loan stuff, we're going to look at all these details at least once so you can know how we get there. But at the end of the day, what are we analyzing for the long-term effect on you? What do you have to bring and what are you paying every month? So you're exactly right.
Yeah.
One of the first questions that typically you would ask is, what are you comfortable with paying monthly, right? Even
absolutely.
Before you ask what their income is. And
yeah, absolutely. On our quick intro call, we try to learn, you know, home loans really boil down to income, assets, and credit. So we try to touch base on our first call, get to know them a little bit, get a quick overview of income, assets, and credit. And then absolutely, that is the big question. You know, what are you comfortable with as a monthly payment? Now we all see that change,
$600.
Right? Yeah, they all, I'd love to be below $1,000. I'm like, great.
$1 million,
city,
yeah.
But, and we all see that change. They go see
you'll
their
have
dream
to look
house.
In Detroit
and,
then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's funny, people go see their dream house and they're like, okay, I could eat out a few less times a month. And their budget evolves and changes. But absolutely, Ben, that is
maybe
a
I don't
huge
need that
question.
Frappuccino.
Every single morning. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you very much for the market update. You guys, we're gonna go ahead and take a quick commercial break. I'm your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate right here at KPPF. We will be right back with our Dear Sev segment. Thanks for tuning in to the Sev Sells Show. I'm your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. right here at KPPF Radio. Now, we are here in studio with Ben Goss, First American Title, and Chris Frankmont, Guaranteed Rate. I love your smile every time. You always do this little shimmy. Guys, I wish you could be in here with us. Now, we're going to go ahead and segue into a note from our listeners. Dear Sev, can I close on my house online, right? And I think that that's actually a really good question. It's a very fair question because what can't you do online? I feel like, I mean, you can date online. You can order a mail order bride online. You can order, you know, food to your door now online.
Oh,
I mean,
I'm
there's
a DoorDash
nothing
VIP.
You can't do on the internet, right? So can we close on a house?
Yeah. The answer to that question is, I don't know. Yes and no, maybe. I'm not an attorney, but I'll give an attorney answer. It depends. it does depend. So if you were a seller asking that question, can you close online? The answer to the question is maybe.
Still maybe.
Still
what
maybe.
What about a buyer?
If you are a buyer, the answer is probably no. You can't buy your house and close all your real estate documents online. Now, I'll ask Chris, because that kind of leads into, it's a mortgage question, right? Most of those papers you're signing as a buyer are for your mortgage. A few of them are for the real estate for your house.
Yeah.
But if Chris's company is going to lend you money and we're notarizing, that's really the key of why you have to come in person is for the notary part.
Right.
Is Chris's company going to be able to sell that loan, if they sell the loan, to a government-backed, you know, security if it has an online notary versus if it has a regular notary?
Yeah, it's a great question, Ben. And like you said, it does depend. Yes, we can. Right now, in very, very, very limited capacity, can we still do that? So our big thing is all of our loans, we do hybrid closings where they sign anything that doesn't have to be notarized online. Anytime the day of closing, those documents unlock at 12:01. They get them early so they can review them. They can't sign anything until 12:01 on closing day. Then they can click to sign all of their non-notarized stuff. They only have to go in and sign a small stack. So that's what we can do still on all transactions. We do that on all of them. Now, there technically is a full e-close where you use e-notarized that does all the notary stuff online. You hold your ID to the camera. And I mean, there's a lot of steps to it. That being said, to be compliant and be able to sell that loan, there is so many restrictions of what we need, the software that has to be used, the title company has to have certain things. So in Colorado right now, there's only one title company that we can legally do a full e-close with. I can't even tell you who it is. It's a company out of Denver. I've never worked with them. I just know that there's one company that we can compliantly do it with right now. I'm sure the others are going to be coming on board. It's a smaller company. Most of these big ones, there's so much more that needs to change that it's going to take a little bit longer. Some of these smaller, more dynamic companies were able to adapt quickly, but I think we're going to see it soon from the big companies. So
it's a good
technically,
part about
yes,
being a
but
small
I haven't done
company,
it.
Right?
Yeah, sure. So yeah. There's advantages and disadvantages.
So, and First American is one we can do online closings. We have a group that's all they do are online closings. They're based out of Florida. Florida caught onto it a little faster than Colorado did. And
but really, it's kind of up to the lender.
It's up to the lender on who they might allow. And
so you guys,
there's so
you guys
many
just
moving
have
parts.
To fight about it, really.
Yeah, we just all have to get on the same page with legalities and compliance. You know, it really was, like Ben alluded to earlier, with COVID really accelerated this, where it was already happening. It made it happen a whole lot faster. And so I think we all kind of rushed out our solutions to the product, and now it's about interfacing those, getting those to communicate, and us all getting on the same page compliantly, because that's what it really comes down to is everyone's scared of their shadow when it comes to compliance. When we're talking real estate, title, and mortgages, there are so many rules and so many gotchas that we all want to make sure we're checking our compliant boxes.
I mean, in compliance, really, it means liability, and it's liability for absolutely everybody, every entity, every individual involved in that entire transaction. You know, even down to the buyer. I mean, and would that affect title insurance at all? You know, is there anything that could appear on the policy if someone signs?
It doesn't necessarily impact the title insurance portion of it. And in fact, the real estate side of it is a little bit easier than the mortgage documents. Those are really the main reason.
Right.
That
so
it's
no one likes
difficult.
You because you're boring, and no one likes Chris because he has all this paperwork, you know, right?
Yeah. I would say if we fast forward 10 years, people will probably be buying a home and not sitting in the closing room as we do it today, signing a huge stack of papers.
Well, I mean, and earlier we had kind of touched on wire fraud, right? I mean, how do you avoid, I guess, closing fraud if you're closing online? You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Because you can order a fake ID anywhere now, right?
Yeah, actually, so that's a great question. Our system, and again, there's so many things. COVID tried to speed this up a little, but the title companies really weren't ready for it to move online.
I don't think anyone was ready for what COVID brought to the table.
So how do you verify an ID is real on the camera? I don't know. Our software that First American uses, we'll go through a series of questions to verify your identity, and we ask questions that you would probably literally be the only person that would know. It might be 10 questions. It would say, what kind of car did you drive in 2008? And you would answer that question. And it's one of those security platforms versus your ID, actually.
So hopefully you've got a good memory.
Yeah, well, and eNotarize does the same thing. It pulls questions. A lot of that derives from your credit report. The issue is when people have inaccurate info on there, you know? So something comes up, which address were you tied with? And they're like, well, none of these, and none is not a choice. And we've had some of those where we're trying to do an eNotarize, and the questions pointed from their credit report was some kind of false data from before, and they couldn't get them right. It was a big hurdle for trying to accomplish exactly what you're getting at. So these are some of the hurdles we're hitting as we try to move towards an electronic environment.
Well, I mean, so many people have things falsely reporting on their credit.
Right. Yeah, tons.
You're right. And this whole thing, it sounds so simple. I mean, like you said, you can order a pizza. You can order furniture and have it delivered basically the same day. But why can't you close on a real estate transaction online? You still do all this old school paperwork, and reason why
real estate is an old school industry. Like, let's be honest. I feel like we're catching up with the times.
It's crazy how much it's already evolved. I mean, when I think back even 5 years ago to how many more clients came in person, brought me documents in person. I mean, that has already shifted.
I'm still that guy.
Massively.
I'm like, look, I printed all my bank statements. And the lender's going, oh, man.
But you forgot page 7. It was blank. I don't care.
No, isn't that the truth? It's definitely interesting to see how technology and real estate are integrating together more and more over the past couple of years here. And really, I think that the real estate industry as a whole has been very behind on the whole technological advancements that we've seen. So it's a refreshing thing. I think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity, but definitely some challenges that come and arise out of it as well.
Yeah, who's going to redo CTME? I'm so tired of that.
Oh, right. Oh, we'll have to do a whole show on just that, you guys.
Seriously.
Well, thank you so much for tuning into the SubSells show. Ben, thank you for being here. Chris, as always, a great pleasure to have you on. I am your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. right here at KPPF. And again, don't forget to like and subscribe to us on YouTube at KPPF Radio 1040 AM, or you can go ahead and listen in at 1040 AM, 98.5 FM, or 95.7 FM. Thank you.